If I provide value, there's plenty of money to be made and plenty of happiness to be attracted as well.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hello and welcome back to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me, excited to have Gary Lipsky. Gary, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me, Todd.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you joining us. And a little bit about Gary. He's a real estate entrepreneur focused on multifamily syndication. Acquired over 3,000 units with a total value of $250 million. He's won the best real estate syndication company by AAOA in 2022, recognized as the 25th fastest growing real estate company by Inc. magazine. He's the president and CEO of Break a Day Capital, also the host of the Real Estate Investor podcast. And so check that show out as well. With that said, Gary, I want to know, what is a mistake you, or we're going to start out right now, just putting the pressure on you. So I just want to know, what's a mistake you've made and how have you learned from that mistake?
Yeah. You know, and this is a mistake I've probably done a number of times of growing businesses, is not hiring more help fast enough. You know, I've got my hands in too many cookie jars, and you need to hire a team around you. And once you do, like, you kick yourself and say, what did I wait so long to do? And, you know, and I'm used to bootstrapping companies and stuff. So, you know, you want to keep your costs down, but man, having that executive assistant or that, you know, the acquisitions, you know, asset manager, someone on your team, as you continue to grow your team, because a lot of people are always like 3 months, 6 months, a year too far behind on hiring someone, and you've got to keep investing in your business.
Is there like a secret for when to hire people, or like, maybe not a secret, secret's a bad word, but is like something you use so you're not a year behind on interviewing?
You know, so Gretzky, Wayne Gretzky, a great hockey player, used to say, you know, skate to where the puck is going, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, act like your company, you know, even if you've done one deal, but if your goal is to grow to, you know, a $500 million company, act like it's there, you know, and start hiring those people, because it does take a while to find the right person. It does take a while for them to get trained up and get used to how you do things. So, you know, plan on that in advance. And we hire two people in October for the company. And because we're setting up the stage for what's to come in real estate and trying to be ahead of the curve and providing a deeper bench, so that if someone does leave, gets sick, takes vacation, like, we have backup. And that's how you got to play the game. You've got to be ahead of the curve, you know?
I like that. I like that philosophy, because it seems like every time we hire, it's like, man, we should have done this a long time ago. Like you said, like, you're like 6 months behind, a year behind, like, we should have done this a while ago. Why didn't we do this? And so thinking about, hey, look, where's our company going? How is it supposed to be growing? Okay, then what do we need? Who do we need in order for that to happen? Obviously there's, you know, financials that are involved in looking at hiring. You don't want to just hire the new CFO and without having any business happening, right? Unless you've got a pile of cash to start with. But so you want to be responsible. But every time I hire, I tell myself, man, we should have hired earlier. We just should have hired earlier. And what I think is, like, if you say we need to hire this person, it's too late already.
Yeah.
Give our listeners a bit more about your background. You've had several, you know, you've started, you've built several companies. You've co-produced films. So give our listeners a bit more about your background.
Yeah. You know, I graduated Boston University with a business degree, and ran some businesses in high school and in college, and I always had that entrepreneurial spirit. I working for someone else, I was just bored. I really didn't do much of that at all because I like to be in the action. Maybe it was naivety, I don't know. But after I co-produced a few independent films, I started an after school outdoor ed and leadership development company here in Southern California, and ran it for about 14, 15 years and sold it. And we were working with 9,000 mostly at-risk youth at the time of the sale. And it was about giving back to the community as well. We would teach kids leadership skills, teach them life through outdoor adventures, and provide gaps in the what the school didn't provide, like tutoring and driver's ed and stuff like that. And most of it was grant funded. But that's always, even in real estate, it was about improving communities and creating win-win situations for investors and the residents as well. And it's not just a, make money type of thing. It's, how can I provide value? If I provide value, there's plenty of money to be made and plenty of happiness to be attracted as well.
Yeah, I love that. How have your maybe take a couple lessons you've learned from both your current company, right? Your the Break of Day Capital and some of the previous ventures. Maybe just a couple success kind of tips, things you feel like are very important, two or three, to be successful.
Well, I'll start with lessons learned, and I'm still trying to get better at it, but communication is so important. How you relate good and bad news to your staff or your constituents and stuff like that is so important because, I when I was younger, I didn't think how it would land on someone. I would just state it, and which is not very good. And you really got to think through, because it could be a huge demote, like negative feedback to someone, or you're not getting them to do what you actually need them to do. And so how you convey information could be so important, and you could build tremendous bridges for great partnerships in the future. So that's one of the biggest lessons, I think, and most important things for building a business: communication. Another important thing is that consistency and that perseverance. Because I was listening actually to a podcast this morning when I was walking, and it's like the winners get the most no's. Like you've gone the door closed on your face. If I'm trying to raise money, I might get a couple hundred people that say, "No, thank you. I can't invest because maybe it's not the right time," or whatever it is. But be okay with those no's. It doesn't matter, because a yes is right around the corner. All it takes is one person, one buyer. So that perseverance is so important. And when I talked to brokers, we closed a big deal in December, and they're like, border, they're like, "We knew you were going to close, like even in this heart of a market," because you always do. You always find a way, and that's really, really important. Having that perseverance, solving problems. Businesses is always about solving problems, whack-a-mole, and moving forward. Not how quickly can you get up,
Yeah, it's I think that's a huge difference between those who are those who are consistent and persevere. If you look at those who are successful, truly successful for the long term, not just for a short season, that's a massive difference. Because my guess, you've owned several businesses, you've been around for a little while, you've had some challenges in your life. And you've had some challenges in business that hasn't gone good every single day, right? And so with that, of course, you need to learn how to be consistent with your efforts and just continue to push on. So yeah, so important. you went 14 months, speaking of persevering, right? You went 14 months without a deal. And you continue to, you know, persevere. You continue to push through. You didn't just give up and change what you're doing. So, you know, that's valuable. But tell me, what did you do during those 14 months other than, you know, eating bonbons and watching Netflix?
Yeah, it's funny. Talking to a couple of operators, you know, they were working on their golf game or their tennis game or this or that. I mean, we were grinding. I mean, we were still underwriting deals. I mean, there wasn't a ton to underwrite, but we want to know where the market is at all points, and we want to collect data points. We looked at all of our operations, and we, you know, what can we improve? Kaizen is one of our values. And so the constant improvements and looking at our asset management and how, you know, where can we get better in? Where are the gaps? Where's there room for improvement? And there's plenty of room. There's always plenty of room to improve. So we really buckled down on that, improved our investor relations outreach. I mean, we had done a lot of deals before I even hired an investor relations person. And obviously that was a mistake, waiting so long, because a lot of that was on me. But, you know, so we were integrating that and building out those systems. So it goes by quick, and we were in a couple of best and finals. We didn't get them, but just keep, like you said, keep grinding and keep doing the work. And finally we found something that was in our wheelhouse near three of our other properties, and it was a great basis. And we fought hard for that deal, and it took a long time to close. I mean, we were in escrow, I think like 5 months, I mean, which is a long time. Yeah, but just trying to get the capital together, and you know, ultimately we got it done. And during that time, I mean, there was a, you know, the seller was definitely working with us because they knew, like, that during it was hard to raise. The markets are moving, and so they gave us that that leeway to get it done.
Yeah. You look, I mean, times right now, it's just not as easy as it was really just a couple of years ago, right? I mean, you know, the raise you did today or a few months ago probably would have taken place in just a few weeks, right? It would have been easy to find that capital. And now it's a lot more difficult to find, but work with the seller, right? Work with the seller. Be honest with them. It's, again, it's that communication that you talked about earlier. And I think most sellers, maybe not everyone, but most sellers understand what's going on in the market. And most brokers, if you're open and honest with them, understand what's going on in the market, and they can communicate well with the seller because they've got a good relationship with them. Why did people say no to the deal? You said it was a good deal. It fits in your wheelhouse. You really liked it. You got to get a good basis. So if you got it at a good basis, everybody should jump at it, right? Of course, that doesn't happen always, but why didn't it happen? What were people's reasonings for not investing?
So during good times, people overlook maybe some things, but when people are, you know, like fearful of investing, they'll analyze every single thing. And quite honestly, we had low cash flow, and almost every single one of my deals had low cash flow to go in with. But now, when times are tough and people are saying, oh, I must have cash flow, that was a big thing. Certainly, Tucson, Arizona isn't the sexiest of markets. You know, we have our loyal investors and followers, but some other people, it's funny, they kind of combine it with Phoenix during bad times, and during good times, they separate it. You know, when good times are like, oh, you're not Phoenix, and bad times they're lumping us into Phoenix, which is, you know, big rent, negative rent growth of late,
ton of building
concessions. And we don't have that in Tucson. It's been nice and steady. Certainly, we had really good rent growth, but not crazy rent growth like Phoenix. So we've been steady a few points in rent growth every year, which is great. And they don't build there like Phoenix. Phoenix builds like crazy. So it's just, those are some of the things. People bring up water all the time in Arizona, and they have a 100-year plan. And Which I love. They don't have a 100-year plan in California. I think California is more of an issue of water at some point. But Arizona actually uses the same amount of water that they've used since 1950s, and they've grown insanely amount in population over that time. So I think that they'll continue to find solutions, and they have a plenty of runway. I think one thing that you should be concerned about down the road is obviously the temperature. And we're not talking in the next 5 years, but maybe it's 20 years down the road where it just becomes way too hot there, you know? But we don't in Arizona, you don't have the crazy real estate taxes that you have in other markets like Texas, or the crazy insurance costs. Although we're starting to see a little bit more insurance carriers trying it's taking raising it a bit more because of the losses in other areas, but those are the things, you know, low cash flow, kind of combining it with Phoenix, fearful of waiting for this tsunami of great deals that are coming down the pipeline, but it that isn't happening. So those are the I would say those are the three biggest things, you know.
So we did our last capital raise was quite a while ago now. It was May of 2023, and it was challenging then. It was very challenging then. That's right, like after a lot of those banks went on, went under, all that kind of stuff. And of course, we're trying to raise capital. So, perfect timing. But the biggest. We had two big things for us, and it's one that you just said is that a lot of people are like, "Oh, we're gonna have a ton of great deals coming to the market, and we're gonna hold our capital till then." Well, okay, I get it, but you might be holding for the next 5 to 25 years, right? If you're waiting for a 2008 to happen again, guess what? The last time that happened was 1920s. Okay, so you might be waiting a while. The other thing it was. Well, I'm preserving capital, and it's that fear base that you're talking about. Like we're preserving capital right now. We don't know what's going on. We're nervous, so we're just not interested right at this point in time. And so, it's interesting, and kind of obvious, right? But when times are good, and you should probably be the most cautious. People are throwing their money into deals. When times are bad and you should probably be the most aggressive, people are keeping their money out of deals. And I really noticed that when I first started in real estate, that was 2008. And I'm talking to banks and I'm talking to banks about these deals that I got. And I'm like, I can't believe these banks are rejecting me for these loans. I mean, I'm buying these things at, $50,000 and this thing sold for $250,000 just a year and a half earlier. And the banks were like, no way, can't do that. And one of the bankers was like, hey, man, unfortunately, this is just the way it is. When times are good and banks shouldn't be lending, they're just throwing money out the door. And when times are bad and we should be lending, we can't. So.
Here's 90, 95% leverage, when you're overpaying, and here's 50% leverage when you're buying a great deal. It's
What are you doing right now to build and grow your network and to find new investors, to communicate with your current investors? What are you doing to, obviously continue to do deals? Because that's a big part of it is you got to come up with the equity.
The best new investors to get is through referrals, because they're ready to go. So we, constantly trying to cultivate that. And you might have, someone that's invested with you twice, that's a super fan, and someone that's invested with you 10 that still loves you, but they're just not going to open up their Rolodex. It's just not the way they are. But so it's just cultivating that with your own current investors, because it's so much easier to keep your current investors and grow from there than trying to convert someone new. But we're always trying to do educational things, because there's so many people that don't know about real estate syndications.
It's amazing too, that, right? Doesn't it feel like everybody should know about it? And you just, to me, sometimes I just take this night, like, I'm just like stupid, right? I'm like, oh, everybody knows about it. Why would I need to talk about it? And then you talk to people, and I'm like, what? What is that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw out a number. I'm pulling it out like out of thin air, but like it could be only like 5-10% that actually really know about real estate syndications. Yeah. And so there's a huge educational piece that has, you know, because they look at it like this sounds so risky, and you know, it's just not, you know, it's just so out of the box, and it goes back to that, you know, investing when everyone else is investing, that herd mentality, and they don't know about it. So certainly I wouldn't say converting people, but educating them on this tremendous opportunity that you don't get in the stock market. You don't get the hedge against inflation. You don't get tax benefits. You don't get a hard asset. So you know, those are the people we're trying to look for, blue oceans, because certainly, there's a lot of opportunity if you're in if you know about real estate syndications. There's plenty of deals that look really good on paper, and so you've got to differentiate yourself and find people to let them know what you do and why you do it differently than someone else.
Yeah, that's a great point, by the way. So if you're sitting here listening and you want to do your own, you know, fund or you know, get your own deal going, there are a lot of deals out there, and a lot of them look really attractive on paper, and a lot of them have very good salespeople that's what they've done, and they're good at selling, they're good at telling a story that might not be accurate or might be, you know, accurate to for an opinion, right? But you have to figure out, you know, how do you stand out? Anything you do in particular to stand out, to say, hey, you know, look, Break a Day Capital is a great place to be.
Yeah. So this is what we pitch. We focus on a few markets so we could be experts on those markets. We're not chasing deals all over the country. We're not chasing different asset classes. We stick to what we know. We've averaged 40% NOI boost in the first year across our portfolio, because we see value where others don't. So that, you know, that's one of the things. Asset management, obviously, I wrote a best-selling book on that. You know, we tell people we're not going to have the highest IRRs out there. We're going to de-risk the asset, to the best of our ability, and provide asymmetric returns that we want to be in position to maximize that upside and minimize the downside. So that's kind of, our pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that for me is, when I have LPs that are focused on the IRR and the cash on cash, and they're only focused on that, I just say, look, I'm not the right fit for you. There's somebody out there that is definitely willing to show you a really attractive IRR, and go with them, right? Because they might not be able to produce it. Don't get me wrong. Like, they might get the 25% IRR, but they also might get the negative 25% zero IRR, right? Yeah. So look, that's not what we're all about. We're not all about the highest, sexiest IRR. We're about realistic expectations. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're saying. Hey, we're risk adjusted returns. We can provide excellent risk adjusted returns. That's what we're focused on.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had a couple investors that invested with someone else in the Arizona markets, cause we made it look easy, and they had a higher IRR than us.
Yeah.
And they lost all their money because they had a capital call, and then the operator walked away from that deal, and multiple deals actually. People chase IRRs, and it's a big mistake. Bet on the operator.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's easy to manipulate a number. That's the one thing that will be wrong 100% of the time, is that pro forma. So, asset management, you wrote a best-selling book about asset management. First of all, let's talk about, I guess, the name of the book. And then I want to know, it's the least sexiest topic to talk about, right? Nobody wants to talk about asset management. They want to talk about raising money. They want to talk about finding the deal. They want to talk about, you know, the IRR, that type of stuff. Cause that's the sizzle, right? But asset management is in fact the important part, like the thing that really makes the deals work. And especially in today's market where we saw like this crazy run up. You talk about Phoenix, like Phoenix had like 30% rent growth. Of course, everybody looked good in Phoenix for a time period, but now Phoenix has got negative rent growth, or depending on your submarket, of course, zero, very little. And so asset management, super important. So let's dive into asset management. What's the name of that book?
Best in Class.
Best in Class. What, why did you write it? Why write an asset management book? It's not a sexy topic.
So no one was talking about it at the time. This is, we started writing it during COVID. So, you know, 2020, I guess we started the book. And in the beginning, you know, when we're talking about it, like, who am I to write this book? You know, like, I haven't done a ton, and there was definitely imposter syndrome. But then, you know, I finally got over that and was like, okay, I'm going to educate other people, because what we're teaching is not for the institutional,
right,
operator, why not? This is for your base. We make it really easy for anyone to take what we've taught in the book and run with it. You don't need expensive software. You don't need an MBA. You know, we really make it simple, and that's how we approached it. Like, how can we simplify it? How can we make it easy for someone to be successful? And it was a great learning process for me as well, because I had to put on paper and I had to make sure I'm doing it correctly. And if I didn't know someone, then I made sure I went and found out what someone was doing if I didn't know those answers. And it was a great process for me. And there's not a conference I go to that someone doesn't come up to me and say, hey, that book's really been helpful to me. Thank you so much. There's nothing else out there. No one else is really teaching it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're looking to asset manage, which you better be, if you're going to be running successful real estate, check out that book, Best in Class. Biggest, you know, key takeaway, maybe a couple, that you want to talk about, what separates an excellent asset manager from the rest?
And it goes back to what we talked about earlier. It's that consistency, that persistence, and I'll add an attention to detail. You know, you don't have to have a much prior experience, but if you do have these things, you're going to get very, very far. You know, mine the data, constantly have your KPIs that you can see and constantly improve them over time. We just had our semi-annual call with our investors. We had 7 properties, and the NOI graph and the occupancy graph was different for every single property that we had. It was really interesting. Like, it's whack-a-mole. It's not a straight line up, and you're dealing with new issues, and there's definitely some seasonality. But if you are consistently managing the property, and working with your team, like, you know, we talked about earlier, that communication, and they know I set up really high standards from the beginning, but I want to, you know, praise them and hold them accountable too. They're going to work that much harder for me versus the property across the way, because they know I'm visiting the property unannounced at times, and not to catch them doing something bad, but hopefully catching them doing something good, that I'm going to ask the questions, and they would revert to the mean if I didn't do that. They'd, you know, punch in, punch out,
yep,
you know, maybe go on Google, shop, whatever, but they, yep, know that I'm going to hold their feet to the fire and constantly push. So they're going to work that much harder for me.
Yep. And it's really easy to understand when you're doing those things. It's really easy to weed out the bad people, right? If you're not paying attention, It's the saying about, the inmates running the asylum, right? And if you're not paying attention, that's what's happening. If you're paying attention, you're holding people accountable, attention to details, you got the KPIs, it's really easy to go, okay, this is working, this is not, this person's working, this person's not, and say, okay, this is where we need to make those adjustments. So that I love the book. Because it talks about a topic that's just, like I said, just not talked about a lot, but it's so important, especially in times where the market's not skyrocketing, like it was just this out of control rocket ship. And by the way, that's like 90% of the time, right? We got caught in it just recently, but that's not normal, and it doesn't. It's never, rarely happens. So, boy, we've hit on a lot of different things. What's on your mind? Like anything that you want to talk about for our listeners?
These days, yeah, it is tougher. We're not riding this kind of rocket ship of tremendous rent growth and valuation. So you've really got to put in the work. There's more turnover at properties, and every time you have turnover, it sets you back. Putting in that extra time on that asset management is so important. But just, I know you and me, we're in it for the long haul. And so I think people come into real estate looking for the get rich, quick. And if it's if you can certainly get rich over time and put in the time, spend the money on your education, spend the money on resources, and you're going to be successful. And for investors out there, go to the operators that are investing in their team and investing in themselves and striving to get better and better.
Yeah, I love that. What do you see coming? You went 14 months without a deal. You bought a deal in December, so obviously you're not saying, "Hey, pencils down." You told us earlier you always want to keep a pulse on the market. You didn't go and golf the whole summer away. But what do you see coming? Are you excited? Are you nervous? Like, where do you feel things are going? And I know none of us have a crystal ball. That's okay. But where is Break of Day Capital looking, and 2024, 24, 25?
Yeah, we're definitely excited about the future. I think certainly I've been shocked by how long the interest rates have remained sticky and how high they went up. And I thought we'd, if you asked me, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, I thought we'd have maybe a rate cut by the end of 2023 and another rate cut by now. And so I started looking at some of my deals where my loans are up and, having to navigate those waters. But I do think there's going to be opportunity, and obviously rates will come down over the next, probably more second half of the year. So that'll start getting some deal flows going. And, I would have, if you asked me 3 months ago, I would have thought there'd be deal flows would start be, picking up sooner. But now maybe maybe fourth quarter 2024, and then start steamrolling again in 2025. But deals have to trade. It's not going to be a tsunami of opportunity, but certainly people's loans will be coming due. They have their cap rates expiring. It'll be interesting, and there's opportunity out there, but it's not all out in the open. You sometimes you might need to work with a lender that maybe has a deal and they trust you, and they can get it to you or through the broker or something. And because deals are happening behind the scenes, not a lot of deals, but there's definitely opportunity. And so yeah, we're excited, and we're making sure everything is humming perfectly so that when there is that opportunity that we could take advantage of it.
Yeah, we are still 10 to 20% off on almost every deal we underwrite. Are you similar? Or are you closer? Where are you guys at?
Yeah, I would say, we're probably about 10 to 20%, and that's been consistent. there are times when it's kind of gone a lot closer, and then it goes back out again. And there's just not that much out there too. So, you know, we'll keep looking, and yeah, like I said, staying on the pulse of the market, and because the deal you don't underwrite could be the deal that was a really good opportunity. So we'll walk the comps and, stay true to our criteria.
I feel like you've got two different people out there right now. You've got somebody who locked in a longer term, rate at 3%. Like, we're not going to sell. You go, sure, we'll sell, but you got to give us 25 million. Like, and you're like, wait a second, this is worth 18. We don't care. Right. And then you've got the other ones that like have a floating rate debt, but they're going, hey, we can't sell. We're underwater. This is our price. We're underwater otherwise. And we're hoping to work with the lender and, just work this thing out slowly. And I feel like it kind of depends on how these lenders react, and they don't want to take these properties back. It'll be interesting to see how interest rates play out and how, I guess, the lender owner relationships work out as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to a broker, and I was looking at a deal, and I'm like, let's, I think it was like 25 million. And I'm like, well, I'd be willing to pay 20 million for that now. And they're like, well, you own a property down the street. Are you willing to sell yours for 20 million? I'm like, heck no, I'll sell it for 30 million in a year from now. It's like, I want to buy at a discount. I don't want to sell it on a discount.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So why are you motivated? I think that's the question when you look at a seller is, well, what's their motivation? I do know several deals that we've looked at have sold because it's people retiring. There's a couple others that people are like, hey, I'm willing to sell it. And I know I've got enough equity in here, and I know I could have sold it for a lot more just a couple of years ago. And I probably can sell it for a lot more in a few more years, but I'm excited to get this cash into my pocket, 'cause we're going to 1031 that into another building that we feel like is a really good deal. So I've seen some of that happening as well. We just had actually a family that sold a bunch of their stuff that was built in the like the 70s, 60s. And they're really just upgrading to legacy properties that are, newer construction. So you never know why people are selling. There's always a reason, but I think understanding their reasoning and what that potential opportunity could look like can help you navigate as well if it's a deal or not.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. Gary, look, really appreciate you joining us on the show. I got a couple last questions before we wrap up. What's a favorite book besides your own Best in Class that you can recommend to our listeners?
Yes, I've got this communication book actually by, why am I drawing a blank on it now? Crucial Conversations, excellent book. And it'll help you in your relationships. It'll help you in business, because it teaches you how to have those tough conversations that we all hate having.
Love it. All right. So last question, what are your three pillars of wealth creation?
All right. So not necessarily in this order, but obviously, multifamily value add. It's like me running my own family office. This is a way to build generational wealth for my family, and reap tremendous tax benefits. Obviously, my relationship. So family, I've got two daughters. We were just in visiting my mom for her 78th birthday, and my brother and his kids and my sister and their kids. And it was such a great weekend of laughs and food. And, it's just so important. And then health, it's hard to be successful in business and your relationships if you don't have good health. So taking care of that helps you feel better, do more for others, and think straight, quite honestly. So health has always been a big pillar of my life.
What's your go-to workout?
I play beach volleyball. I live by the beach a couple times a week. I walk. I probably average over, last year I averaged 2.3 miles of walking every day. Now, I don't walk necessarily every day, but I'll do some hiking and whatnot. Yep. But over the course of the year, just keep moving, we are such a sedentary lifestyle that we lead now. So I like moving. So yeah, those are my things. I used to play a lot of basketball. I don't as much these days, unfortunately. But yeah, I'll play anything.
Cool. Gary, again, really appreciate it. How can our listeners get in touch with you? Learn more what you got going on.
Yeah, head to our website, breakupdaycapital.com. We've got investor resources. You can sign up for our newsletter. You could see our latest deals. We have just a ton of information there. So that's the best way. And I'm on social media as well.
And then Real Estate Investor Podcast as well.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you. And I'll have you on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So check it out. We're doing a little swap here. So again, appreciate it. You have a fantastic rest of the day, man.
Thank you. You too, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate you being a loyal listener. Say, I would love to have you go on to our Facebook page and subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Go on to iTunes or wherever you listen and give us a rating and review. Don't forget to subscribe. But your rating and review just helps us push this out to more and more people and continue to grow our audience and hopefully positively affect a ton of people out there that really need this and want this. So the other thing I've got for you is a free ebook on my website. So go on to venturedproperties.com, venturedproperties.com, and download our free ebook on real estate and on syndication. And I've got some data points in there, some really good stuff for you. So I'd love to have you take a look at that. It's free. I'm not expecting anything from it. And also, look, if you want some help in multifamily, want some help learning, growing, getting your business off the ground, I would love to talk to you about what it would look like to work with me potentially and see if that's a good fit. So you can go to coachwithdex.com and check that out, and we can definitely have a call. Thanks a lot for listening. You make it a fantastic rest of the day. I'll catch you on the next episode.